And welcome to Here We Stand. It's June 9th. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, Bella Chow. I'll be in prison or on TV. Well, better are those places than sitting in apathy, indifference, and complicity, right, folks? Well, the times they are changing. If you followed the news at all, you know some amazing things are breaking forth. And let me summarize them for you briefly, because we're going to be talking about the details of that on the show today with two of our guests. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau admits on June 4th that genocide has occurred in Canada. Quote, it was genocide, unquote. He then issued a summons and indictment to appear before a domestic war crimes trial in Vancouver on September 16th. One of those people summoned, the Chinese ambassador to Canada, is then immediately recalled to his country in order to leave Canada. Meanwhile, the genocidal Canadian churches, also named in the indictment, are issued eviction orders by Indigenous elders and NGOs. And just as the same NGOs at the United Nations begin to debate how to expel the Vatican from that body. Well, if that wasn't enough, just a day after Trudeau made his announcement that genocide did occur in Canada, proving everything we've been saying for 20 years, folks, one day after that, the Secretary of the Organization of American States, that's most of the states in the Western Hemisphere, issues a letter prompted by this ferment, and it calls for Canada to be investigated for genocide after 20 years of people making that same demand. Well, you could look at this a number of ways, folks. They're trying to contain it again, thanks to the OAS. They're going to have yet another investigation that leads nowhere. What they're ignoring is the fact that under the UN Convention on Genocide, they're countries that admit to genocide are not to be investigated, they're to be prosecuted and punished. Those are the two words in Article 4 of the Genocide Convention, UN Genocide Convention. Canada is now to be prosecuted and punished, not investigated. We have all the evidence at hand, murderbydecree.com. Also, it's interesting, this fellow who is making the call from the OAS, he's the what's known as the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, Luis Almagro. And he said in a letter to Justin Trudeau on June the 4th, the mere presumption of the crime of genocide against Indigenous women in your country should not and cannot leave any room for indifference from the perspective of the inter-American community and the international community. He then went ahead to say that they're going to investigate, do their own little inquiry. Well, Luis, you know, what you have to realize is that there's no time left for inquiries. It's now a time for prosecution and punishment. And this is international law speaking. They conveniently ignore that part in the convention, of course. Well, what's interesting is that 2 years ago, we released a report, what's called the Continuity of Genocidal Crime in Canada, because you may have noticed that the whole discussion of this officially is about the Missing Women Inquiry. They're trying to peg genocide as having occurred only in the last 30 years in Canada. Well, we know very well that it's gone on for hundreds of years. So it's another way to sidestep the history. But what's significant about this, we linked the two periods. In this report we issued in September 2017, it went to all the countries of the world, to the UN, and to a Luis Almagro at the Organization of American States. He has a copy of this, and it points out a number of things. Let me quote from this report. It is clear that a continuity of crime exists that spans decades and links the church-instigated residential school atrocities with the rape, torture, and disappearance of present-day natives, especially women and children. The crime has never stopped and is being protected by the same unholy alliance of police, government, churches, and other unknown parties, unquote. Well, the very fact that we put that out there, we're showing the genocide of yesterday is linked to the genocide of today, therefore you can't talk about it, about the last 30 years alone. Pretty obviously trying to sidestep that whole issue. Well, today, we are carrying forward this struggle. We're going to talk about this indictment and summons sent out by our tribunal and other individuals and groups that's going to convene in September 16th in Vancouver. The summons and all of that can be found at murderbydecree.com, and they go to the section that says ITCCS updates. It's right there. And you'll notice, if you take a look at that, that what's important is what these people are being accused of. 21 individuals, starting with Prime Minister Trudeau, as a complicit actor in this crime, they're being charged with the following: aiding and abetting genocide, causing ongoing genocide in Canada, covering up that crime, defrauding the people of Canada, and being actively complicit in the crime. And we mentioned the 12 Mile Club, where children are being trafficked offshore and killed. We talk about Chinese investors in BC working directly with the Trudeau government to clean the Indians off their land to grab their resources. Missing women, whose bodies are then found missing organs. That's never been mentioned in the Canadian media. All of this evidence that they're trying now to suppress, that's all there. In the, if you look at the indictment and the summons listed at murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, go to the summons and indictment PDF in the article, you'll read it right there, the charges, specifications, and the summons. Now, they're all legally required to appear before this tribunal, September 16th in Vancouver. We now already have indications from various countries and groups that they want to be there. We've requested UN peacekeepers, and if not them, then the common law police sheriffs will be there to guard the witnesses, protect the proceedings. In the weeks before that, especially the week of September 9th to 16th, there will be teach-ins and educationals and actions in Vancouver and all over Canada and the world to build towards this tribunal. So if you want to be involved in that, write to itccsoffice@gmail.com. or thecommonland@gmail.com, and you can be involved in that. So it's really important to see that all of this stuff happening, including the admission by Trudeau, is the result of this grassroots effort. You know, people may often get demoralized that we're not being quoted, they're trying to shuffle the real evidence to the side. No, it's an indication of the real success and impact we're having. So that's important to keep in mind. Now, my guest today on the show, there's two women will be joining me. Christy, who was with us last week, talking about common law action, setting up our own citizen assemblies and common law sheriffs to take the law into our hands, since the system is so corrupt. And Belinda, who will be calling in from New York City. She's an Aboriginal woman with an amazingly unique story of her own, kind of like what it's like to be in exile in one's own culture, which I know very well. So hopefully they're with us. Don, are they on the line? Yes, they are.
Yes, we are.
Welcome to both of you.
Hi,
Christy
there.
And Belinda.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you so much. And thanks for that intro, Don. I'm so excited to be back again and ready to jump in. There's a lot. We got a lot of ground to cover, and it's all good stuff.
Absolutely.
Forward moving.
And we do want to get into the details of this amazing news that's coming forth, you know, in the world today. But let me just ask Belinda, since you're our new guest and you haven't been on before, I wondered if you wouldn't mind just saying a little bit about yourself and, you know, your own thoughts on some of this and what you want to kind of touch on a bit today.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I am an artist, a choreographer, a dancer. I came to the big city to try to get my endeavors accomplished, and it's been obstacle after obstacle thrust upon me. So it's been very difficult. And
now you wrote out one of the things that we've talked about is you actually wrote a piece depicting the attempted genocide of the of your people, the Pueblo people, by the Spanish and their revolt in 1680, I think it was.
Right.
You didn't actually get a lot of help from your own people for producing this. Do you know, like, what happened and why?
I sure didn't. I don't know why. It's just an ongoing repression of real information. And I think a big part of it is the complete infiltration of Catholicism. And there's this thing going on where, although it is a tribe, they're so brainwashed that they don't want to believe any of these things happened in the ways they happened. And people from the local area have written in saying this Pueblo Indian Revolt of 1680 is the equivalent of 911. You know, I mean, it's just madness the way these people are suppressing real information. This was, in fact, the very first American Revolution. And
tell us briefly what happened and what you tried to do in your dance performance to show that.
Well, the the ballet excerpt that I shopped around was exposing the method they used to conduct this revolt. And with mere strategy, they were able to convince tribes spread throughout New Mexico to revolt at the exact same time. And that was the only way that they were able to defeat the Spaniards with all their weapons and artillery and chase them out, down to El Paso for 12 years. So I brought this material out, and I also used classical ballet, and Dvorak's 6th and 7th symphonies are what are being used for this three-act ballet in its finality. And this is just something that is not really understood, and so it was rejected. Not only was it rejected by my culture, my tribe, because they just thought, where does she get this information from? How does she know this? The classical ballet world rejected it because everyone's used to the stereotypical representation of the Indian, you know, and they actually had the audacity to ask me, why aren't these people wearing clothes? And they were wearing breechcloths and things that they would be wearing in that day and age. They were questioning, where are the drums? Why are you? How dare you use classical music? Where are the moccasins? What's going on? They need to have clothes on. It was very strange, and this is, you know.
Well, you know, Belinda, the affinity I felt with you right away is that you and I are both rejects and exiles from our own cultures. Because I mean, today they're talking about genocide in Canada. You know, in 2010, we released a list of mass graves of these children at the Indian boarding schools, totally ignored by the media. We did a dig invited by the Mohawks that showed the children were buried in these places, totally ignored by the media. All of our 2017 report, ignored by the media. Now suddenly they've discovered the issue again. It's the same, you know, the only truth can be on their terms. And this is what I'm hearing in your words as well.
Right, exactly. It just goes on, and thankfully this kind of show is getting people to wake up. We need to red pill everyone.
Yes, well, we're doing our best. It's kind of like I often get the impression like we're facing this huge warship and we're in a rowboat with a little cannon taking pot shots at it. But, you know, one of the days that one of our cannonballs is going to enter the hold and hit their ammunition, the whole ship will blow up. And I think we're beginning to see some of that at least. Just hold on a minute, Belinda. I want to ask Christy if she wants to come in with any comments or anything.
Sure. I just kind of want to add to what we're talking about in terms of red-pilling America, or I mean, not even America, I mean, red-pilling the entire world. And Belinda, it brings me to, you know, a thought in my mind that we're shaking up people's entire reality. So there has to be a phased approach to the type. So it kind of turns into audience, like who's your audience and how ready are they to hear this information? I couldn't walk in and go talk to my grandma about this. She'd probably have a heart attack and die. But if I went and talked to, let's say, a group of peers, I can dive right in. So the reason I say this is that I've hit many roadblocks in trying to bring and red pill people and all of the types of awakenings of, you know, where people are at in their current state. And audience is so critical. And I realize now kind of why I, you know, took the path I did in my life. And I went kind of corporate. I did some marketing and sales. And now it kind of brings me back to, okay, if I'm going to deliver a message, we got to think of audience and how we're being able to get that audience to absorb and hear it in the highest and best fashion now. Because you're right, Kevin. Time is working. I don't want to say against us, but we need to use the momentum of everything that's happening right now to red pill them fast and say, look, we're already moving to trial. So if you're supporting us, you know, just support what we're doing on a higher level. You know, at least give yourself the education. And it's, you know, the phased approach of giving people that red pill, I wish I could just, you know, jam it down their throats right away. But it brings up a very relevant, I don't want to say problem, but relevant idea that we need to address collectively as we stand for human rights and against these criminals.
Well, you know, one of the things that's undeniable is, like, we held our first tribunal into these crimes exactly 21 years ago now. It was June 1998. And I'll tell you, the media showed a great interest in it. And yet, by the end of the tribunal, there was one media report. They all vanished. They were told to vanish. Because for the first time,
wow,
we weren't just talking about physical and sexual assaults. And I don't, by that, I don't mean just. But that's what was allowed into the corporate media. Children are raped and harmed at these schools. We had eyewitnesses talking about sterilization programs, medical experiments, 50% death rates, mass graves, children still being trafficked by the native chiefs on the reserves all over northern BC, the very place that they're talking now about the missing women. We were bringing all that out in the late 90s, totally censored out of the Canadian media and down the memory hole. So now it is amazing the extent to which they can bring in amnesia overnight and just have everyone now not only forget but want to forget, because this is what we're dealing with. And I think, Belinda, right. we talked about this once. It's not that people haven't got the right evidence or information. It's never about evidence. It's about they don't want to hear it. It doesn't jive with their worldview, so they will look at our evidence and look through it as if it's not there. I've seen that in politicians, journalists, and these are seasoned people. They all agree it's happening, and yet they can't acknowledge it. And, you know, it's we're not going to get around that by how we operate. We just have to get and not worry about exposure anymore, but find their weak spots and press. And it's happened again, right? They wouldn't be admitting genocide now unless this was finally pressing them on a nerve. And we don't even know what that is. But we know if you keep pressing, that'll get a more response, and they'll come down. I mean, we're beginning to see it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Kevin. Belinda, go
ahead. Belinda, anything to add on any of that?
Just that it's like living in that movie, They Live, you know? You put on those glasses and you can see it all, and why can't they see it? You know, everyone needs those sunglasses. It's just insane that the world is like this, and they have selective empathy. It's very odd. I can't even
read that term.
I can barely get two pages in without a deluge of tears just overwhelming me trying to read Murder by Decree. It's just amazing.
Tell me, as somebody from that culture, what was your response when you began to read it?
It's just incredible that all of these records exist and these things happened and people don't expose them and people don't know about it. And when you talk to them about it, they want to change the subject. They don't want to deal with it. And yet it's rampant. But everyone has a great-great-great-grandmother that was a Cherokee princess, you know. It's just, come on, you know. If you want to be or acknowledge the Indians or be a part of this culture, you know, just naming your sports team after a tribe is not respectful in any means, by any means.
Lynn, do you feel like sharing anything about your own experience growing up? You know, what it was like kind of spanning two cultures?
I thought that was going to be like for another segment.
We can do that another time. That's fine. I was just checking in on that if you wanted to. That's fine. Now, what I wanted to ask both of you, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this, is there is this upcoming tribunal, and it's like the last time we did this, and every time we try it, it's an amazing opportunity to bring people together who are outside the box and say, this tribunal isn't simply investigation. It's a way to create a new kind of power where people can put the system on trial. And it's what led to the common law trials that forced Ratzinger to resign and other cardinals of the Church of Rome. It begins to empower people because we're not waiting on the system anymore. We're starting this. We've already got people lined up to be judges. We're opening it up as a public forum, really, and a court to put these people on trial. So thoughts of either of you about how we can go about this, kinds of other issues we can bring in, any of that? Just wanted to get your response.
Well, let me just say one thing, please, that when you asked me the question earlier, I will clearly state that I was one of the children in one of those boarding schools. It was a Catholic boarding school in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I had to run away from that school because there was a lesbian nun that was after me, and she was attacking me and waking me up every night. And I have some missing time from that whole experience before I ran away, so I fear maybe other more horrific things happened. But I ran away from there, and no one believed me, not a single tribal member, not a single member from any other tribe that I talked to. They behave as if I was doing stand-up comedy, trying to say, you must believe your children if they come to you and say that there are things that are happening to them. You cannot only believe the priests and the nuns and dismiss your own children. And that was a horror to realize that they're so brainwashed that my own people sitting there listening to me beg them thought I was doing stand-up comedy, thought it was a joke. No.
These incredible. Kind of, I understand there was an Indian hospital in operation down there, too.
Yeah, there was an Indian hospital right on the campus of the Indian school where I grew up, and it was run by military doctors. So there's a lot to be said about that. I do have relatives in my family who were used in experiments, and including some of the women that were had their uteruses removed. Bad.
Wow.
It's a really bad thing.
It's a pattern all over. We've got a lot of that documented. Again, murderbydecree.com, if folks want to read it. You know, here's the thing. There's just so much evidence. There's so much history there. It would take many shows to go through exactly what's happened. I mean, the process of cover-up is just as criminal and just as revealing, maybe even more revealing than the original crime. And I want to. What I'm going to do this week is repost this report we issued in 2017, a report on the continuity of genocidal crimes in Canada and appeal to the people and governments of the world. It lays it all out right in there. And we'll send your copy if you want to write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. But we're going to have it up on murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates this week. Christy, about tying this into things we talked about last time. For example, how this genocide's continuing today, the forced vaccination, the attempt to steal children from their families, destroy the family unit, all of that. Talk a little bit about that if you can.
Sure. It brings me up to, or brings up kind of like a fundamental question as to why does society in general, or those in that power, keep turning the blind eye? If this is a continuation of genocide and a continuation of these crimes, there's a bigger underlying elephant in the room that I don't know if we've, you know, identified, you know, in specifically, but I do believe there's a strong financial tie into all of this. So when you have the purse strings attached to your benefits or your tie, whatever that purse string is, for everyone to keep turning the blind eye, we have to expose that. So in doing that, you're the continuation of genocide, bringing back from the 1600s all the way up until today to say that, look, this never went away. And, you know, addressing that, why it never went away. So there's something that's deeper here. So what we're what we are doing is it's a multi-phased approach here. So we understand that this is all interrelated, you know, whether we want to believe it or not. The Vatican, it has ties to the Federal Reserve. The Vatican has ties to the World Bank, the IMF. Those are major, major, you know, correlations that we cannot ignore. It really brings you to like, okay, so if the Vatican controls all of the purse strings of really the entire world, you can see now why people keep turning a blind eye. Because we understand whether we want to agree or not agree, money at this point in time, the way that this earth has been terraformed is the way that it makes the world go round. And I don't want to say money in the term of gold and silver, but the currency that we use. And what is our currency right now? It's the dollar. It's, you know, it's some sort of fiat currency. So with that currency and the purse strings, you come with the allegiance of anybody that gets a benefit with those purse strings. So we're now at a point where we're awakening people up to, look, you will have to make a decision. You are going to have to make a decision on protecting human rights and the rights of, and just the innocence of children, and having your purse strings cut off. But that's okay, because guess what? We have a solution that's coming, that's in the works right now, where we're doing the exact same thing that what they do, but on a larger scale. Well, we're going to be forming a common law trust or a pure trust. This is something that everyone really needs to understand what this is, because this is what truly gives everybody the power back in their own hands with their own financial independence. This is what this is the tool that most of your higher, you know, the elites, the upper class use. But what that does is that it doesn't allow governmental interference. So a common law pure trust is something that's owned by the people. It's governed by the people or the owners of that trust, the trustees. And then we're going to have a board of advisors that's going to be the overseers of what those funds are going to be doing. So when we go and we start putting together our affidavits and saying these are the crimes against humanity that you are currently facing, and then we get the verdicts with our common law, with our tribunals, whatever those verdicts are. We want the truth to prevail, and that verdict is sound, because there should be no other discrepancy in what we're presenting, and that is the truth. So with go ahead.
No, finish.
Okay, so with those verdicts and whatever those verdicts look like, we will be, I mean, let's just say in a perfect world, we will be having access to be able to seize those assets because of the crimes against humanity. And if we have a tool that we're able to have those assets under, which would be the common law trust or pure trust, then that gives us that severance that we need to not have the fear of the Vatican and their, you know, cohorts coming in and say, no, if you don't ignore this, we cut you off financially. Now, we can't prove that that's happening, but what other ways can we do that except for say, look, you have an option over here. If you need to have some sort of financial stability or financial assistance, this is a tool that we can use once we start reclaiming all these assets back from the Vatican, from these criminals, and then putting the power back in the hands of the people. I mean, this is a phase where we need people to wake up and help us.
Right. Now, here's the thing. No disagreement with anything you're saying, because we have to create working alternatives if people are going to get on board and create a new society, right? And that's
right.
The difficulty. People talk, but there's nothing material to back it up with. People are not going to leave an old system until there's something new to belong to. So we're in a kind of a bind where we're operating at the level of that idea, but we don't have a lot of power to back it up with yet. Like, for example, how do we enforce these common law verdicts? People keep saying, well, have you arrested the Pope yet, Kev? And I said, no, personally, I haven't gone to try to do it. There's a guy, a native guy in Canada, splitting the sky, who tried to do it on Dick Cheney when he came to Calgary one day, and he got arrested and grabbed and beaten up, and everyone laughed at him because he tried doing it on his own. Well, we don't want to do that. We don't want to act like buffoons and play into their hands that way. We need police to come over to us. We need peacekeepers to come in and protect us. We need common law sheriffs who are trained, and I mean actual guys who are able to take down other people, people with the professional knowledge and expertise how to do it. That happens. The more momentum you build, people start coming to you. But we have to plant our own flag first. And I, you know, the dilemma I find, Christy, I can really relate to everything you're saying, but folks like us, we tend to be out in front so much that it's easy to get cut off from the rest, because we see clearly what needs to be done, but we can get isolated from our own base. And here's an example. By analogy, my uncle Lloyd was at D-Day, you know, 75th anniversary recently. He was in a Canadian unit that landed at Juno Beach. The Canadians, actually, at Winnipeg Grenadiers, they got further inland than any unit on D-Day. They broke through the German line, and they were so far ahead of everybody else. The SS counterattacked. Hitler used, as a matter of fact, that unit that Pope Benedict was in, although he denies it, Joseph Ratzinger, Hitler used. Anyway, they counterattack. They cut off the Canadians. They take two companies of Canadians and they shoot them. Well, they shoot the first company, and the second, with my Uncle Lloyd, he was about to be shot too, but they got saved by a German officer at the end before that happened. But my point in saying all that is, if we get too far out in front, we get cut off, and that's what's happened over the last 15 years for me. I mean, we never want to reinvent the wheel. We never want to go back and state the obvious, because we've gone through it. We're veterans. And Belinda, you know what I'm talking about. You know the truth, and yet it makes you feel totally isolated. So the real art is to how to not get isolated from your base and yet keep the awareness that people need, right?
Right. Can
you threw that out for your comments. What do you think?
I'm thinking that this is really the time for the next 1680 revolution, because it is the Pluto and Capricorn situation in which it is, everything is coming out, all this, nothing can be hidden, nothing can be kept secret anymore, and it's all being exposed. And the way that the Indians were able to organize this revolt was with this incredible strategy. It was so simple. They had this knotted cord, and these runners would run to each tribe and instruct them as to when they would, what day, what events would be happening celestially, and they would untie a knot each day, and each tribe would strike at the end of each, you know, the knot, as the last knot was untied. And that's how they did it. But that's kind of what needs to happen. Everyone needs to be organized. Everyone needs to realize there's going to be a period of lack, and the only way that we can do this is to strategically, everywhere, simultaneously say, stop the madness. This is not going to continue.
Christy, what do you think?
Absolutely. And that was a great visual with the knots. I mean, I think that's really what we need to get back to, is the analog way of communication, of organization, and effective action. There's no other way that this is going to be a revolution if we don't be organized and we don't have the discipline of our ancestors. We've done this at some point of one incarnation in our hundreds of thousands of incarnations here. So it's inside of us how to do this and how to do this the right way. So it's having these open conversations, having that plan of action, having your support. I'm telling you, the most important thing that Kevin, you said was don't get too far ahead to isolate yourself. And I fell victim to that last year. I felt like I was literally the only body on an island thinking, like, how are you still going to church on Sunday when you know all these things are happening? And in reality, it's because it's the cognitive dissonance. So there's got to be it's an art. It's the art of war. It's the art of disclosure. Yep. There's so many arts to all of what we're doing. So putting the right people in the right spots to do the right things is absolutely critical. And Kevin, you've done an amazing job giving us the foundation of where we can be to be most effective.
I wanted to ask you both, like, I know that you both have said to me that you had questions of me, of this work, of this history. I want to give you the chance now if you have anything you want to ask me about any of this, because I know there's a lot to digest when you're first encountering this.
I'll go ahead and I'll ask that. So in your entire history of you know, essentially standing for the rights of children and indigenous women and children, where have you seen your success come from a grassroots perspective? What has been your most successful? Maybe just campaigns or efforts that you've garnered the most awareness from a grassroots perspective, not necessarily public, but to get people right on your side aligning with you.
Well, a couple of examples. My base was in Vancouver. This started because I had lived there and worked there for many years, and I knew a lot of people. And I was just on the street with a lot of Native people. In that one neighborhood in Vancouver, there was over 30,000 indigenous people living there, mostly on the street in slum housing. I knew a hell of a lot of people. And one day I said, you know, it's time to confront these churches, not just talk about it. And the word went around the Moccasin Telegraph, right? And one Sunday, they just went. A woman I knew, Carol Martin, she started gathering people out of the Sweetgrass Center. She said, come on, we're going. And as it was kind of like one of these scenes in a movie where you're walking down the street and there's people joining you from all sides, this massive wave of people.
Amazing.
By the time we got to Holy Rosary Cathedral, that's the main Catholic cathedral, there was like 100 of us there. And we kept doing that and eventually went in and occupied the church. And that's what broke the back. The government announced within 2 weeks this so-called apology when we did that. But that was culmination of many years' work. Yeah, people will not work with you unless they trust you and they know you. So there's no substitute. That's not going to happen over the Internet. It can only happen face-to-face in your communities. And building on that, it was like a wave. We weren't able to force Ratzinger to resign unless we hadn't been known. People trusted the work. They saw the evidence. It was all true. And, you know, it hit a critical mass. So there's no substitute for just constant presence all the time. That's what we've tried to maintain. Even when it looks like you're being overwhelmed, the power of the truth is much greater than our numbers all the time, and we have to trust in that.
Great.
That was great.
Yeah.
I agree, absolutely, and that's how I'm still doing what I'm doing, despite being sidelined with injury, despite...
Sorry, you totally broke up. I couldn't hear you there.
Despite the relentless obstacles, I have no choice but to do what I'm doing with my ballets, representing what I think needs to be focused on through my art. And
Sorry, I can't hear you on the phone, but I can hear you on the laptop, so I had to listen for a moment what you said.
Oh.
Carry on. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, Belinda.
That's okay. That was it. I just wanted to say that we, you know, have this endeavor, and we see it through no matter what.
Carry on.
That actually brings me to... Can I
go ahead, Christy.
Okay. That brings me to a follow-up question of you know, us being in the grassroots, down in the trenches. I mean, we really are the front lines. And Belinda, thank you so much for everything you have done and your courage to keep doing what you're doing. It takes more than what people even could comprehend to understand what's going on and then to act upon it. So from the bottom of my heart and soul, thank you. And that brings me to a follow-up with everything that we are doing. Organization. So if we're local and we're grassroots and we're trying to stick to an analog approach, it really does boil down to who your core team of people are and how well you can organize that core team of people. And in that organization, if Kevin, I know you're coming down here in September to help train our sheriffs. But you know what I think is more the most effective is having people that just genuinely have the passion to help children. And when you appeal to somebody's heart and say, look, it's a matter of protecting the children. It may not be your child today, but it could be your great grandchild next, in 20 generations if we don't stop this now. And it's, the appeal to the heart and the soul, because who cannot stand for or stand against somebody that's harming a child? And so the protection of children really gets people to open up their eyes. I think from me and my discussions that I've had with people is when you appeal to that heart from protecting children, that's been the biggest opener of the door for having people jump on board and want to help us. Because it shakes people's reality. Yes. to know that they've been lied to their whole life.
Well, a good example of that, Christy, is when we began our campaign, we told the truth. We just said, this happened in Aboriginal children. Total indifference. And then somebody once, one of the Native people actually said to me, stop talking about Aboriginal children, just say children. Okay? And we did, and bang, he was right. The interest went up because this unstated racism, deep racism all over Canada, which Canadians don't like to look at, they don't care when it's Aboriginal children. They do care if it's children. I mean, that's the reality. Somebody just sent me a message saying, talk about why Trudeau has admitted genocide now. And I don't want to speculate on this. I just want to go on what I know. No one is ever going to admit to genocide who's a signatory to the UN Convention, as Canada is, unless they knew they weren't going to face repercussions, right? So obviously there's been a little deal made that there's not going to be charges laid against Canada for admitting that. That's kind of a given. Case in point about that, the Genocide Convention has been around for 70 years. In those seven decades, only two powers have ever been accused of genocide and had the convention applied. That was Rwanda and Serbia. Now, the Rwandan genocide and Slobodan Milosevic, they're on trial, head of state, for killing a lot of non-Serbs, okay? Leaving out the fact that a million Serbs had been slaughtered in 3 years in World War II by the Pope and the Vatican-run death camp at Jasenovac. But, people always leave those little facts out. But these two powers, Serbia and Rwanda, they're named, they're prosecuted because they're not in the West. They're not allied with the West. No major power is ever going to be prosecuted on the UN Convention on genocide. And I think Trudeau once again proved that fact. We're seeing the cover-up in place. The OAS responds with, we'll do another investigation on this to give more credence to their version of cover-up. So, yeah, you can see the game, the powers that be play. They protect each other, just like the church and state have always protected each other. But in the process, they are exposing themselves and are losing their legitimacy among a hell of a lot of people. They're eroding their own credibility by doing it. And we need to strike at this moment. This is a key moment for everyone to get out there and start putting the pressure again on the churches, the governments, join our network, get involved in direct actions, because that's the only thing that ever gets a result.
Absolutely. And it brings up another, we mentioned this earlier in the show, but the continuation of genocide, to link all of these crimes, it is absolutely paramount to keeping the exposure going. Because once it gets buried, then it's a whole new story in the next 5 years. We can't let anything fall any way, shape, or form by the wayside. It is full, pedal to the metal as best as we can. Talk to neighbors. I mean, even from, if people want to know what they can do, don't ignore it. I know it's uncomfortable. I know this is awkward, but just casually bring up the press releases, casually bring up the indictments, and then you start talking about what you know and your facts, and then it plants seeds. Do what they do. Plant seeds. agree with, because you have no idea how powerful the subliminal conscious is and programmed every single moment of every day that you are not in control of those thoughts. So we have to use what they use against us. Plant the seeds of subliminal messaging every way, shape, or form you can. That is what everyone can do if they want to help, at the very minimum.
Coming from an art background, I wish so desperately that things would start to change, because the redundancy is ridiculous. How many times are they going to make the same movie over again? How many times are they going to do the same Broadway play? These are more ways that we're kept numbed down and remain stupefied. We're just zombies. And how can I, give my spark of evolution to the world when they don't? They just want to go see another version of the same damn thing. It's just ridiculous. But that's kind of a big part of what I'm fighting in the art world and the dance world. I mean, I don't understand abstract art, and yet there it is. It's being told by somebody in power that this is valuable, and so therefore you should have one on your wall. And it's a joke.
Well, you know, Linda, I don't know if I mentioned this when I spoke to you the first time, but there was a similar dance performance produced in Canada based on my book, Murder by Decree. It lasted 1 week. It was called Fragments. It was done by a Montreal choreographer. She came out to Vancouver. She got my book. And there were four women dancing in this production, and they represented children in an Indian boarding school. And it was an amazing performance. And right at the end, they had a narrator read out, quoting directly from my book, like Maisie Shaw, murdered December 24th, 1946 by Alfred Caldwell, buried, so-and-so. They listed the names of the children, the ages, how they died, where they're buried. At the end of the production, it stopped. There was no applause. It was a very affluent white audience, okay? I was there. I was watching in Vancouver. No one said anything. They were staring gobsmacked. You could see their whole worldview getting blown right out the window, right? They only did a couple of performances there, and then she said, well, we're going to start the tour in Montreal. Turns out the tour got canceled after 1 week, right? It's like when they shut down the production of my play about the Indian hospital in Nanaimo. It's not allowed to get out there, right?
Exactly.
And this stunt is discourage us, but we have to find like water around a rock, like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, constantly moving around our obstacles, right, to find the common ground again.
Absolutely. We know what we're up against. You know, Kevin, Belinda, we understand the magnitude, and the most important thing to remember is we are small and nimble, and to use that to our advantage. Like you mentioned that in your book, is that we're agile. We can be resilient. If they shut us down here or they stop us here, we have the power of our passion and our truth. So we start lighting, like you said, Kevin, I think it's the Paul Revere quote, where it doesn't take a whole bunch, but it just takes a couple of patriots and you know, truth seekers lighting the little wildfires all across, and then those are going to start to blossom and bloom into something even bigger. So it just boils down to the people need to stop accepting what is happening. And, you know, I think your audience is very well in tune with that, but, you know, talk to your neighbor who maybe doesn't think that this exists. It is our duty to the children to expose this, because only one way people come and we want this to stop. They'll keep doing it.
We have so much fun in the process doing it. When you're a guerrilla movement, you can have so much fun. I remember when we first began to pick these churches, one janitor came out and he said, you caused 50 of our people to resign last time you were here. And I said, well, that's the start, right? I found out later they had pictures of me in all the downtown Vancouver churches, warnings about this horrible man. It's like you can do such great theater. And Belinda, you know, we should talk about doing some good street theater about this.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go to Cedar Square and dress up like the Pope, put a tea cozy on my head, and walk around just in a sarcastic performance or something. You know, but these people are guilty. They know they're guilty, so they're very easy to provoke.
One of my characters in the ballet is a drunk monk.
A drunk monk. Perfect.
I mean, we should do the stand-ins. I mean, go down to, like, Venice Boardwalk. That's a city down here where there's, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, throughout every day. So the most And I go back to audience, the most exposure. So if we did, if you guys have something where we can replicate it or do it, and you know, in public areas, absolutely. You have, you know, I'm volunteering. I'm raising my hand right now.
Hey, you just got recruited.
Yeah.
But I should say we got about just over 5 minutes left. I want to give Belinda, if you have anything you haven't that you want to say that you haven't said yet, go ahead.
Well, the one thing that drives me nuts about this world is that. People talk about all the incarnations they've had. People talk about reincarnation. People talk about having multiple live experiences. Why does that not remain dear to people's hearts? If you have had all these incarnations, then you've been everything there was to be, including one of those children that got killed. So why can't we now start to think about
that? Why aren't we learning?
Pardon me?
Why aren't we learning?
Exactly. Yeah. Where is the God? Where is the brain? Where's the process? What happened? We're so stupid anymore.
Well,
it's by design.
I bet a lot of people listening have their own personal answers on that. But go ahead, Christy. Yep.
That's a great segue, Belinda. Thank you. You're absolutely right. So. It's designed for us to be, you know, we're zapped into these bodies, we're given amnesia, and then we're told to learn everything as we go and be the best person that we can because there might be a heaven or a hell at the end of the day. Well, when you are in tune with your higher self and you know the truth, you don't need to seek those external validations. So we have that foresight and that knowledge to understand that we came down here for a purpose. And in that purpose, it's to show people to be fearless, that you don't need somebody telling you to be a good person in order to be a good person, such as a religion. You don't need the law saying don't wear or you know, put your child in a car seat so it doesn't, you know, you don't crash and the child gets injured. It's the going back to us reclaiming our sovereignty, our freedom, and our independence of doing the right thing when nobody's watching. We've gotten so far away from that because of the distractions and, you know, just the society designed to keep us distracted. So it takes discipline, it takes diligence, and it takes integrity to do what we're doing. And I'm only saying this because we need everybody to take that next step in their personal lives. It really boils down to personal responsibility. Do you want a future for your children to be blissful, amazing, and give them opportunities? Or do you want to turn a blind eye because it's not happening to you at this moment in time? I swear, when it does happen to you, it's going to be too late. The people that haven't woken up right now, when it will be on their shoulders or when it will be their children, it will be too late. So we are blessed with the foresight to know that this day is coming, and we need to stop it. And so it goes back to just everybody rallying together. Just we know who we are. We know our souls. We know our soul groups. And stand beside each other. Speak your truth. Don't be afraid. Do not be. The point is, be utterly fearless in the face of pure evil. That is all that the universe, source, God, whatever you want to call it. We just have to stand against evil and be fearless in that. Think about if you created a reality and you wanted to have beings and you wanted to live in that reality. Let's just for a minute play God. How would you want to have a universe that exists? And you need to have evil and you need to have goodness exist. So you create a spiritual kindergarten such as Earth so that people can go live and you know, be the best person that they are. And then they finally, when they reach that perfection of fearlessness and evil and the true spiritually perfect human, you've stood up against everything in this lifetime. And then guess what? You can graduate and elevate yourself to the next level of spirituality. But we need to stand that ground here and now. And it's so critical for everyone to have that personal responsibility of spiritual attainment and fighting evil in the face of anything. That's what it boils down to.
Here's the thing. I mean, even if you don't believe in reincarnation, let's say we're here just once. This is an amazing experience. We only get it once, okay?
Yep.
Some of us, let's say that's the case for a moment, we're born, we don't need to learn anything from previous life. We're born with an inherent understanding of what's right and wrong. That's the whole basis of common law. It's born in us, right? Whether we've acquired it over many lives or whether it's just there inherently, to me that's irrelevant. It's here, and the question is, are we going to express it or not? Because if we're not going to express it, we might as well not be alive. We eat, we sleep, we do whatever, and then we die. Like, what's the point? We can only justify our existence by doing what's right and living up to our highest potential at every moment. And if we don't, it's a walking death. And so I want to just really stress on people how everything is measured by action. not by talk, because we're look at what they're doing with the word genocide. They're all throwing it around now like it means something to them. And the reality is it's more bafflegab. It's designed to cloud something that's going on as we speak. There's children being trafficked and murdered and experimented on as we speak. And our anger, people say, where do you get your courage from? Like, Chrissy, you said something very true. You have to be fearless, but people find that difficult. How do I be fearless? I'll tell you how. You let your rage and anger and upset over what's going to happen to that child be stronger than you worry about yourself. You say, I don't care what's going to happen to me. That's got to stop. Once we get enough people doing that, we're unbeatable. But as long as everyone's running around worrying about themselves, they win every time. And I can't stress that enough.
That was so perfectly said, Kevin. Thank you. That was brilliant.
Now, 2 minutes left. Any final words of wisdom? Because I got a couple of announcements.
I just want to say one of my common images in my artwork is a hollow eagle head, because that's the symbol of every culture, of every place, every office, in every capital, everywhere. The eagle in every country, but it's hollow. There's nothing there. Just empty. It means nothing, and that's where we are. We need to stop with this. What's it called?
Thank you, Belinda. I look forward to having you back on in the future, Belinda, to get into more detail of your story. And Christy, you as well. Any final words, Christy, that you got?
Just choose service to others over service to self. That's what it always will boil down to. If your service to others, meaning protecting children, is higher than your service to self, you're doing the right thing.
All right. Thank you both, sisters, for being on again. I love you both. And we are the common heartbeat. We'll carry it on. For folks listening, next week, one of the things we're going to be doing is I'll be going into more detail about this report on the continuity of genocidal crime, because it lays the basis for the tribunal in September and this ongoing, really, collapse of the legitimacy, if it ever had any, of the Canadian state and everything related to it. There's a move at the UN now to expel the Vatican. That's growing with leaps and bounds. There's going to be a press conference on July 1st in New York about that. And if you want to be involved in that work, write to thecommonland@gmail.com. Please go to murderbydecree.com. Under ITCCS updates, you can see all of this work. And I'm going to end on a very important song to me. It kind of expresses my view of Elizabeth Windsor, the woman who my Irish relatives call that bitch in Buckingham Palace. And this is dedicated to her and her collapsing regime in Canada. Thank you all. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.